High FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
And this is the Deep Dive, and I am your host, Brooke Spector. And we're going to try an experiment today. We're going to take an insanely difficult and complicated topic, one that affects everybody in ways that are impossible to understand by normal people. And we're going to break it down, and we're going to make it clear and lucid, crystalline clear. And I have an expert on hand to do this. And I have already seen his work. This is Jonathan Phyllis Bell, a partner with Tradecraft Advisory. I got it confused in my head with Warcraft, but it's not war. It's not the computer game. I heard his presentation, or a presentation by him, shall we say, with one of his colleagues about a month ago that was done for the American Chamber of Commerce in a webinar. And he had about 300 slides to show us with graphs and tables and diagrams. And in spite of the complexity of this topic, it was a really good job. I mean, it explained things, and it took all these disparate bits that were floating around in my head and put them in a system. And that was really the key here. There is a system to be held. And the magic word today is, everybody sit down, don't run away, don't give up on us, don't switch over to an easy listening classic rock station. We're going to talk about tariffs. Oh dear, tariffs. Buzzword of all buzzwords. Now, I don't come to it entirely as a neophyte. I mean, in university, I actually read Alexander Hamilton's report on manufacturers, which was really the beginning, the foundational document in American government to talk about the idea of tariffs. Now, Hamilton was one of those guys who thought about the policy implications more than the revenue earning implications. The tariffs, if I could summarize a very large piece of work, his idea was that you impose tariffs selectively on imported goods in order to encourage domestic manufacture of items. In a sense, Hamilton was the father of industrial policy, or at least as we think of it today. And the Trump administration in America appropriated some of Hamilton's ideas, but I think it's also fair to say turned it around and saw it mostly as a revenue enhancement, as a way of earning some income. And they perpetuated a slight fairy tale version that they would make foreign companies and foreign countries pay, and magically the money would just roll into the U.S. Treasury. And it would go from black and white to technicolor in the way things would work out. I'm borrowing from Who Framed Roger Rabbit, but okay. Anyway, Jonathan, it really is a pleasure to have you. He's got a long resume. He's got all manner of qualifications. But I really want you to sit back as an audience, listen carefully, and learn from this one, because we are calling this, as I said, Tariffs for Dummies. And I don't mean to imply people are stupid, just that this is an insanely complicated topic. First of all, Jonathan, what is a tariff? Why are we even talking about this?
Yeah, Brooks. Well, thanks again for having me. It can be complicated, right, tariffs? But I think it's in fact not that complicated. I think, you know, I would say let's take a step back. You're sitting in South Africa, you could be in the US, you could in fact be in any country. A lot of the goods that you have, a lot of the things that you like, your phone, right, down to the cup of tea that you sometimes drink or that you drink in the mornings, all of these goods move across borders, most of them, in fact, right? And as soon as a good crosses a border, there's a fee to be paid, right? For most goods, there's a fee to be paid. And that fee, simply put, is a tariff. So if I bring in tea from India, right, into South Africa, as soon as it crosses the border into South Africa, The revenue service is going to sit there at that border and they're going to collect a fee. We'll get into the detail of what that fee looks like, why that fee is there, what it is really intending to do. But as
And who
soon as
paid?
that
And who
product,
paid?
and who paid, more importantly, right, to clarify that. But it's as simple as that. So as soon as a good comes into a country, there could be a fee that has to be paid, and that fee is what was generally called a tariff.
Now, why does one have a tariff? I mean, for years and years, I mean, if you read lots of other economists, John Maynard Keynes and others, even if you go back as far as the 1700s and the physiocrats, they all have argued over three centuries that the best version of tariffs essentially is not to have any, is to allow the free, total, efficient transfer of goods from country A to country B for the benefit of producers and consumers like you and me. I don't drink much tea, but I have a cup of coffee that's clearly imported in my hands right now.
We can shift the example to coffee. That's as I said, any good, right? And that is typically coffee in particular is typically what would come into a country, right? So to your question as to why we pay this, well, there's a couple of reasons why a tariff is paid on goods. So firstly, the obvious one, right? It is for a government to bring in some revenue. So there is that element of a tariff, right? But it goes much further than that. An important one is to protect local industry. So what do I mean by that? There's a lot written in South Africa. In fact, I wrote my research paper for my LLM on this issue, and it is chicken, right? So the consumption of chicken in the country, a very important protein source for many people in the country, especially on the poorer side of the society. And so one of the things that South Africa has done for many years, and we've been in quite a fight with the US for over almost 25, 26 years now, the South African government pretty much imposed a tariff on goods, on chicken in particular, coming into the country. And that tariff, I'm not going to get into the fancy words that we use for it. It was a very specific one. But the point being there that the reason they imposed the tariff is simply because they wanted to protect the local industry. So what does that mean? Our local chicken farmers, chicken producers were protected by this action. And how do they get protected?
Can I ask a question before you go any further? It's easy to say the chicken growers or raisers or whatever chicken people are called were protected, but it is a little less clear than that because there are the big companies that that raise most of the chickens that most people eat, and then there are the small new chicken farmers who have a slightly different view of the matter, but there is also the people who buy the chickens and the stores and other places that sell them and wholesale them, and everybody's interest is not exactly the same. So, I mean, the chicken growers here wanted to make it seem as if, 60 million people were united against those dreadful American chickens, when in fact, I talked to various other versions of the market and they said, "No, wait a minute. Whoa, 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 stop, stop. We wanted to import the chickens."
Yes, exactly. So, that is a brilliant point you touched on there, Brooks, because that's exactly it. Whose interest are you protecting? Now, the government would say, look, we are protecting the chicken farmers, the chicken growers. And when we talk about the chicken growers here, these are the big corporations, right, that control that industry. But now imagine is someone down the road, they've got a really good market, they've got a really good deal to bring in chickens from Brazil, for example. Now, as soon as you increase that tariff, it makes it difficult for you, or rather, your chickens that you are bringing into the country that you are importing is way more expensive. So it doesn't work for that person, right? And so again, we're going back to why do we use tariffs? Again, a government can raise revenue, of course. Secondly, they claim it is to protect industries, and there are some industries that's very good. Let's think about the motor vehicle industry, Brooks, right? At the moment, the government is considering, we've seen an explosion of Chinese manufactured vehicles in the country, quite literally an explosion of it. Now, how many Chinese vehicle producers do we have locally? None. We don't really have them. I know in PE there's one, but for all intents and purposes, it's all the German vehicles that are locally produced in South Africa, right? And so again, there are now talks that the government is trying to impose a tariff specifically on Chinese motor vehicles coming into the country. Why? Because they want to protect the market for the manufacturers in the country. And so this is again the government considering. I know they're talking about it in the motor vehicle industry, but the key here is what they're trying to do here. And again, this talk. So when you read about it, when you see it in the newspapers, that is what they are trying to do here, is trying to protect the local manufacturing industry from all of these vehicles that are being imported, exactly like the chickens. But again, Brooks, here's the thing. Different interests play out at all times. But the key is with tariffs, and as we know it from a more academic point of view, is that raise revenue, protect local industries. That's pretty much it.
We're going to take a real quick ad break and we're going to be right back. This is The Deep Dive. I'm your host, Brooke Spector of IFM. And my guest today, Jonathan Phyllis Bell, who is one of the reigning experts in this country on the dreaded word tariffs. And we're trying to make it simple, easy to understand, so that you, when you have that dinner time conversation with your neighbors, you can say, wait a minute, I understood that so and so is not quite what you say. We'll be right back after these messages.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Right.
And we are back. This is The Deep Dive. I'm your host, Brooke Spector. It's Hi FM, of course. And my guest today, Jonathan Phyllis Bell, one of the reigning experts in the country on tariffs and import duties and all those other things that frighten the horses, but we have to understand them. That's the task. And this is a station where we're going to provide a certain didactic and educative function this time. And so we're doing tariffs for dummies. And Jonathan, you were busy giving us all the reasons why you protect a market, a domestic market. Domestic manufacturers, rather, or growers, as opposed to a market, because as we discussed, the market has many sectors, and some importers constitute an interest group that wants lower tariffs, generally speaking, and consumers almost always want lower tariffs because it means the price is lower, and the manufacturers locally in a complementary product, they want the tariffs through the roof if they could possibly get them, I guess, make it impossible to buy that foreign whatever it is. Some countries don't necessarily use tariffs as their primary motivation for import control. They come up with something called phytosanitary rules, and in simple terms, that means we have to check very carefully to make sure the who's it, what's it bug isn't being imported that way, or the product wasn't poisoned by some chemical that we outlawed and so forth. Are phytosanitary standards and tariffs mutually complementary? Are they different? Do they have different kinds of effects? Help me understand that.
Yeah, great question there, Brooks. So if we take a step back, right? So again, I'll go back to the simple example of let's move to fruit. Let's take oranges, right? So again, just always keep this in the back of your mind that we're talking about the movement of goods, right? A physical product. So again, a tariff is there, as I explained just now, why it's collected. But at the border, you would generally collect a fee. This is what we refer to as a tariff. Now, broader than that, a government has a toolbox. Think of it like that. The government has a number of measures, a number of tools to protect a country when it comes to trade, cross-border trade. And so if you think of the phytosanitary standards, and that's such a fancy word, but what that simply means, what it simply means.
It's meant to be fancy. It's meant to be confusing.
For sure. You know, but what it simply means is this. Think again, let's use an example. Let's take oranges or citrus fruit, right, from South Africa. South Africa has been in a big fight with the EU for many a years. Why? Because the EU, the people in the EU, again, different interests, right? So the average person on the street really enjoys South African citrus, all citrus fruits from South Africa. But of course, there's an issue because in the Mediterranean, they grow their own citrus fruit. And so there's competition now, right? And a couple of the countries in Europe, what they've done is they said, no. South African, there was a certain bug that was affecting South African citrus fruit. And because of phytosanitary standards, they raised that as an issue with the government. The government then imposed restrictions on bringing South African citrus fruit into the country because they said, well, if you bring in the citrus fruit, not only is it not good for the citizens necessarily, but it's going to affect our crops in Europe. So we cannot have this bug coming in from South Africa. Now, the reason I use that example, it just shows you that governments can use these standards they can use it to protect local industries, but it can also be sinister, right? And this is where we start talking about trade barriers, the barriers to trade. So phytosanitary.
My next question, actually, that's great. Go ahead.
Exactly. So phytosanitary standards can be used as a barrier to trade. Because if I want to protect my own market, I can just come up with something, right? Something fancy and then say, no, we're not going to bring your goods in because there's a problem with it. And then the scientists fight in the countries, fight politically. But the point being that governments, that's another measure that governments can use to control or manage trade into a country. So it is different from tariffs in this sense. So phytosanitary standards is aimed at a very specific product. It is generally aimed at a specific region or a specific country. So it is really isolated. It isolates the country that you are targeting, the industry, down to the product, like in the citrus fruit example, whereas tariffs are more generally applied. So the concept is similar, but this is where they differ a bit.
Now, isn't there, when you get into a squabble over phytosanitary standards, you know, the mysterious black spot on the oranges, for example, the case of the U.S. and Japan, whether or not rice was raised in a certain way and did it have certain fertilizers or pesticides that should or shouldn't be used or whatever it was, or it hadn't been blessed by the gods. I mean, there were all kinds of wonderful explanations. Isn't there some sort of international referee that says, now hold on a minute, boys and girls, let's get to the bottom of this. I thought the World Trade Organization was supposed to be the impartial referee in these kinds of things, but it doesn't seem to be a vigorous, aggressive, enthusiastic referee.
So, you know, brilliant question again. And this takes us back, right, to quite some time now, in particular post the Second World War. And these institutions were set up, right, and I'll put it plainly like this. A number of institutions were set up to facilitate what we used to call globalization, right? And integral to globalization was trade, international trade. We are going to start trading more freely with each other around the world. The World Trade Organization, the WTO, was exactly set up as the arbiter between countries when it comes to global trade. So, and not a very long time ago, Brooks, but some time ago, the World Trade Organization was, in fact, very effective. Countries would take their disputes. If they couldn't solve it between themselves, they had the option of going to the World Trade Organization, make their case, like in a court case. Let's say, for example, Italy doesn't want to allow our citrus fruit in. This is why that's wrong, and it's really used as a trade barrier. Please make a ruling. And if it goes in your favor, Italy would then have to abide by it, right? And the system has worked really well. The truth of the matter is, until a certain gentleman came along called Donald Trump.
I know we were going to get there at right about halfway through this, and here we are.
Yes, because but this is the truth of the matter. He has turned the entire global, and let me stick to trade, the trade globalization when it comes to trade, international trade. What we knew before, and I'm talking 7, 8 years ago, perhaps, what we knew before has been turned upside down, quite literally, meaning that the WTO at this point in time is left in a lot of uncertainty. Because of how the U.S. is currently dealing with international trade.
Now, the challenge, and I'm glad you raised the Donald Trump's views on the matter, because the starting point of for him, of course, is that he viewed tariffs in a very affirmative and positive manner, drawing from that old Hamiltonian idea, but really inverting the process. Instead of being a manufacturing encourager, it became a revenue enhancer,
correct?
More or less. I mean, and he took certain pieces of legislation, law, American law, trade law, and legislation that was designed to deal with specific immediate emergencies, and used them in a universal manner to impose tariffs globally and fairly, how should we, what's the word I'm looking for, idiosyncratically, one country to the next based on unknown considerations, shall we say.
Yes.
That version was overruled, but was overturned by the U.S. Supreme Court as being not consistent with the letter of the law, because it was effectively a tax, and taxation is the province of the Congress and not the president. Am I explaining this correctly?
100%. 100%.
I can go on tour with this, right?
certainly. But on point. On point, yes.
And this upset the international order in a major kind of way. What were the consequences of this?
They were, it's really been quite severe, to be honest. So I think just to maybe address one very important thing here, Brooks, and that is the idea that the foreign governments were paying this tariff. I think this is very important to point out at this stage. So again, simply put, we're sitting in South Africa, we're bringing in coffee from Brazil. The coffee comes in. You've already bought the coffee from the supplier in Brazil, let's say for 100 rand. The product gets to the border. There's the 100 rand, and let's say there's a 20% tariff on coffee. So now who's going to pay that 20 rand, right, of the tax, i.e. the tariff, the 20% tariff? It's the importer. The importer sits in South Africa. It's whoever imports that coffee into South Africa, that is the person that pays the tariff. Now, common business sense, what are you going to do? You've bought the coffee, it's cost you Of course, a very simple example here, but it's cost you 120 rand to bring in the coffee. You're going to sell it now to the end user, so to Brooks there, so that he can have a cup of coffee in the morning. You're going to sell it for more than 120 rand. So let's say you go and sell it for 140 rand. That's what you're going to do with that coffee. You need to make a profit. You need to cover all your costs. And the tariff is a cost for the importer. So the whole idea that foreign governments pay the tariff is completely farcical. It's incorrect. That's not the case. The importers in the US pay the tariff and you assume that cost or you pass it on, but eventually they will pass it on to the customer. And so that is the issue with prices of essentially rising at the end of the day. And this is what we started seeing in the US because of the tariffs, right? Now, back to your question around what has this done? This random, levying of tariffs against different countries. Whew. It's turned the system upside down. Now, look, I think, and no disrespect to South Africa, our own country, if we started doing that, honestly, there wouldn't be a great, the impact wouldn't be close to similar. We have to consider just how massive the US is in the global economy. And because the US occupies that space in the world, whatever it does has a really serious impact on everything else in the world. And so when Donald Trump unlawfully, as the Supreme Court now has ruled, just imposed random tariffs, and I call them random because it was really random, against this country tomorrow, I'll increase it by 5% or 10%. Here's the problem with that. That's not how tariffs are levied. That's not how tariffs are created. It is an exceptionally long process. It's a laborious process. You have many investigators. It costs a lot of money for you to try and get a tariff raised. That's how it's normally done. And what President Trump has done, he's come and he's just said, no, I have the power to just decide tomorrow whoever I'm going to tariff. And so it's not just in the United States of America where the importers now pay a higher cost, pass it on to the consumer, and there's issues within the US. But because the US occupies such an important role in the world, largest economy by far, it just upended everything in the world. Because the world, they suppliers to the US, but they're also buyers from the US. And so the uncertainty that was injected into the system was the worst that could have happened.
That's the key. The eclectic, the uncertain, the random version of this. I remember two examples, which of course really tickled me and astounded me. There's an island somewhere in the south that has no people. Makes no crops, no products, and they had a tariff. And then poor Lesotho suddenly was facing an 80% tariff on its very, very tiny share of exports to the United States. But for the good people in Lesotho, this was like a death knell.
Yes.
Because, whatever they were making was now costing far too much for anybody to buy it.
100%.
Now, the Trump administration has essentially admitted defeat over that version of tariffs, a total presidential whimsical choices, but has reached back for a different version of law. That's the so-called, what is it, Section 322 in American trade law and regulations. Which applies tariffs in a slightly more different what kind of way. I'm not quite sure I understood the distinction between version A and now version B.
Yes. So version A, it is important to just for a couple of seconds stay on the case that the president lost in the Supreme Court of Appeal. What he did there, he relied on legislation, the abbreviated version, IEPA. He relied on that legislation that was really, it's really in place for, let's say, emergencies, right? For an emergency, if there's an emergency in the US, the president can act without Congress's input or blessing. And so that's why he went for that piece of legislation. The only difference here is that the court said, no, you cannot use this piece of legislation because you cannot impose a tax. A tax is Congress's issue. You as a president can't do it. The reason he used that piece of legislation was because it's expedient. The president can decide without consultation. That's why he wanted to use it. So the court said, no, you cannot do that. But what he has done now is he's now gone to, again, without going into the specifics, but he's actually gone to other pieces of legislation where he, in fact, can level tariffs for sure. And the difference here is now doing it properly. That's the difference.
Yeah. Okay.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
And we are back, and this is The Deep Dive. I'm your host, Bill Spector, on Hi FM, and my guest today, the man who is actually able to make tariffs comprehensible and even entertaining. I mean, this is, you need to go on tour with this. We're talking to Jonathan Phyllis Bell of Tradecraft Advisory. I asked him to do this with us because I heard a presentation he did for actual specialists, people involved in international trade in a professional way. He had lots of charts and diagrams, but it was clear, although there was a fair amount of jargon, and I wanted to bring him on to do this without the jargon and without the charts in a way which everybody can go, ah, the clouds are lifting. I see what we're talking about here. All right. Now, you've been talking about the uncertainty that was provoked by the first round of Donald Trump tariffs and the continuing, presumably still uncertain landscape with the second version. But I want to take you back in history to 1930. The Smoot-Hawley agriculture tariff, which imposed enormous tariffs on imports into the United States, mostly of agricultural products, which some economists argue was one of the major causes of the Great Depression, or at the minimum, made it much worse than it might have been had they not passed such legislation, because the amount of imports into the U.S. dropped precipitously once that became law. And that, of course, the ramifications of that affected a country like Germany, which was trying desperately to pay off its reparations, and for Britain, which was trying to pay off the loans that it had gotten from the United States, and on and on and on. And the ripples just went worldwide. Are we headed in that direction, or are wiser heads grabbing hold of the reins on this to stop this before this goes over that cliff? I know I mixed all the metaphors possible there.
Yeah. It's, again, a great question there, Brooks. Look, I don't think we're heading exactly in that direction. I think what is happening at the moment is far larger in the sense that it's something that we haven't really seen in the last 80 years, and I don't think there's a very good example for where we are at the moment. That is my view. And the reason I say that is this. Take South Africa as an example. So I hope we have some time to touch briefly on AGOA, because that's also a word you hear.
That was my very next question after this.
Okay, excellent. So we'll get there. But simply put, I mean, if we look at South Africa's trade since, Donald Trump imposed the tariffs last year, in fact, if you look at the statistics, we've had a slight uptick in trade. And we're like, well, why is that? I mean, a lot of goods have really been impacted negatively by the tariffs going to the US. Now, why is that? And what we are seeing is countries are really looking elsewhere, forming different relationships.
There's more diversification of importers and exporters.
100%. That is for sure happening. I mean, We thought that a trade agreement between the EU and India are many years ago, because these things just don't happen overnight. There's a trade agreement in place with India. You know, we signed not a trade agreement with China, but wherever the framework is finally in place for a trade agreement with China. And so what it has done, it's actually made people do exactly that, diversify, look elsewhere, look at other trade relationships. And I think that is the immediate aftermath of Donald Trump's tariffs is exactly that. People are looking elsewhere. And here's the difficulty. Should Donald Trump leave office and you have a more understandable or a government, and when I say understandable, I mean someone that comes in that believes in the global order, in globalization, in international trade, it's very difficult. It's not like a light switch. You're not just going to go back. And so the other thing I foresee here is, again, let's not forget that the US is a massive power, a massive buyer, and people, you know, you want to do trade with the US. But I think longer term, the relationships have shifted, even, and I'm talking international trade here. And I think that is what we're seeing more at this point in time, what the tariffs have done.
Now, you mentioned AGOA, which is, for many people, is another one of these dark holes in which it's not clear what in the world this is all about. Well, everybody chants it all the time.
Yes.
My understanding of AGOA, when it was first introduced, we're talking now a quarter of a century ago plus, the logic of it was the more trade there is with or exports from Africa to the U.S., the better the growth, the rise in economic growth in those countries. The more growth there is, the more economically and ultimately politically stable the country is. And an economically growing, politically stable country is a more democratic society. So the ultimate goal is a universe of growing, stable, democratic nations bound up in trade to the United States. And the practical idea was to remove what were, after all, fairly small trade tariffs against most African products, because it's a rare product in Africa that is grown in or made in the United States easily. I mean, the argument's always you can grow strawberries in the Arctic, but you have to spend a lot of money to do it.
That's right.
The argument has been made. Most of the countries in Africa had sort of modest positive effects. South Africa was a major beneficiary if you separate out the oil exporting countries. And AGOA, the African Growth and Opportunity Act, expired last year, or right at the beginning of this year, really, and has been renewed for a year. South Africa presumably will still be eligible, although there may be a review of its eligibility. Why does it matter? Because it didn't remove much of a tariff in any case for most products.
Yes. So, you know, this is, and again, great question. And I face this with clients, Brooks.
That's my job, to introduce things like this.
Right. And so, again, we go back to what is the whole issue injected into the global system is uncertainty. And that's no different here. So you've really laid AGOA out very well. So most products from the countries that partook in AGOA, or that America identified in AGOA.
Or in some of the countries.
Exactly.
I have to stop you. Hang on to that point. Don't go away. I have to give yet another commercial message, or we'll be in trouble again. Here we go.
IFM 101.9 megahertz of life.
And we are back for our last segment. This is the Deep Dive. I'm your host, Brooke Spector, on IFM, and my guest today, Jonathan Phyllis Bell, from Tradecraft Advisories. And we're talking about all manner of trade issues and tariffs, and we've moved on a bit from the sort of the overall overall theme of tariffs, and now we're into the specifics of AGOA. And he was just about to explain why the uncertainty about its continuation beyond a year and South Africa's eligibility or the lack of it is important and a contributor to the larger question of uncertainty in trade relations. Jonathan, go ahead, please. Pick up where I stopped you just a second ago.
Not a problem. So as I said, simply put, AGOA assured that most products, and I mean most products coming from these 36 African countries, including South Africa, would enter the US duty-free. A great example here is if we look at motor vehicles. So under AGOA, that's one of the reasons why it was so attractive for BMW, for Daimler Chrysler, Mercedes-Benz, all of them to set up shop in South Africa, because they would assemble the cars here in South Africa, and they would then ship it from South Africa. So again, we refer to that as gaining South African origin, but we're not going to get into that detail. So the goods technically originate then in South Africa, and under AGOA, those goods would enter the US duty-free, right? So making it very attractive for companies to set up, manufacturers to set up in South Africa. And what then happened with, so I can confirm that South Africa is still part of AGOA. It was extended for another year, but here's the catch. Under AGOA, as I said, most products that originate from these African countries do not attract a duty in South Africa. But if we take motor vehicles, what did President Trump do? He went and imposed a 25% tariff, import tariff in the U.S. on all motor vehicles. That's what he's done.
Worldwide.
So what is this now doing? Under AGOA, you can bring it in free. But the question now is, well, what happens with this tariff that has now been imposed by the president? And it's still in force as we speak, 25%. Unfortunately, what they've done, they've applied the 25%. Again, really putting a lot of strain and pressure on the South African motor vehicle manufacturing industry. So if you consider that, what's the use of AGOA? Because the zero tariffs do not apply anymore. And so this, again, I've come back to the issue of the great uncertainty that it has created. Even though AGOA as a legal instrument is now still valid, it is active for another year. The question in the US is, and the question here for manufacturers and or exporters of goods to the US is, do we apply this 25% tariff or does AGOA apply? And I can tell you in practice, AGOA has not been applied. So this is a great issue that we're sitting with. So it's an agreement that is legally still effective, but is it? Because the other duties that President Trump has announced is actually being applied to these goods, which is a big problem for any AGOA, any exporter under AGOA in South Africa, for example.
These twists and turns are going to keep you in business.
Yes.
you're going to have a lot of consultation time with exporters, I can tell you right now.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we have to call a halt to this. We have to wrap up because I have to give way on the airwaves to somebody else with another discussion on something else entirely. But I must tell you, Jonathan, it's been a pleasure. You have made a topic which could drive people to the, you know, to the far edges of chaos and confusion. You've helped make it simple. You've made it clear, and that's a real skill. And you know, I really appreciate that. We've had a wonderful time with you, and I'm glad we could do this. We've been speaking with Jonathan Phyllis Bell of Tradecraft Advisories. I almost did it wrong again. Almost said Warcraft. Now I just said it. Okay. Tradecraft Advisories. And I asked him to do this because I had heard him give a presentation which was meant for economists and business people. And I said, if he can do that, he's got to be able to do it this way. He's got to be able to do it clearly and simply for all the rest of us. And it's been a pleasure. And I really thank you for joining us. And I will call on you again the next time there is some extraordinary issue we have to deal with like this. This is The Deep Dive. I'm your host, Brooke Spector. This is High FM, of course. And we'll be back again next week with another topic. It might be nuclear physics. It might be growing plants. It might be a book that somebody has just published that I loved. We like to keep you guessing. We don't want you to think that there's only a one note for this program. This is The Deep Dive. You all have a very good weekend. We'll be back again with you next Friday.